This is VSiN by the Books on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We begin hour number two. It is VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross here, Circus Sports Fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada. Our closer, Jensen Lewis, back home in Cleveland, Ohio, before he gets on that big bird for Omaha tomorrow, College World Series action. Great to catch up with Kate Constable. It's been a minute here. Give her a follow on X, as I do, at Kate Constable. Does a great job on the Better Angle. Joins us here in the Progressive Guest Line. Kate, great to be reunited with you in our Chicago roots back in the day here. We've got a lot going on now in the WNBA that Jensen and I wanted to pick your brain about, because a lot of times people now, it's Major League Baseball, we get it. The day in, day out, 162, we're in the finals in the NBA and the NHL. Football's still coming up here. But if people are looking to maybe make some money on a league that maybe not everybody is betting on, how can they take advantage of what you've seen so far in the WNBA?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's smart to get in on a league like the WNBA right now, because the books are focused more so on baseball, some of the other sports, upcoming lines for NFL. And so a lot of these lines, while they are getting sharper compared to what they were a couple of years ago, they're still a little bit softer compared to other sports in the market right now happening. So jumping in on the WNBA, always fun. And I mean, we've seen some great games so far. It's a top heavy league though. So anyone who is getting into WNBA betting, just understand that like it, futures, championship futures, things like that. Like there are really only four teams that have realistic opportunities to win. So that's always important when you're looking at a newer league. If you're a new WNBA fan, just to understand kind of the hierarchy of that league.
Yeah, great stuff. Lynx and Liberty, the two undefeated teams right now, 9-0, 8-0 respectively here, Kate. All right, for metal fans out there, the band is Dream Theater, but we get Dream Fever tonight. So the couple of games here on the slate on a Tuesday. Break it down for us. Dream 4.5-point favorites here against the Fever. Of course, we know Caitlin Clark still dealing with her injury. How do you size it up just from an offensive standpoint, and where potentially you lean to the Dream in those points?
Yeah, I like the Dream in this one. No Caitlin Clark. That line moved from 2.5 to -4.5. So market favoring Atlanta without Clark for Indiana. These two teams have already played twice this season, and both games were extremely close. Atlanta won game one by one. Indy won game two by five. And Indiana really thrives on turning their defense into offense. They rank second in points off of turnovers. But what Atlanta has is the perfect recipe to combat that. The Dream don't turn the ball over. Second in the league in turnovers per game. They also lead the league in points off of turnovers allowed and fast break points allowed. So they're not going to be giving up a whole lot of easy buckets in transition, which again is kind of like is what the Fever like to do. And that's even more difficult when you don't have a player like Caitlin Clark on the floor to be pushing your offense. Now, the Fever still have a stacked roster without Clark, but it is a little bit different of a game. The Dream also have the advantage in rebounding offensive boards. So I'm leaning towards, well, I'm not leaning, I'm taking the Dream here minus the 4.5 to beat the Fever without Caitlin Clark. Plus, the Dream need to continue winning these Commissioner Cup games. And tonight is a Commissioner Cup game. If they want a chance to play in the finals, they have to win out in those in-season tournament games.
Yeah, you mentioned it off the top here. It's kind of the have and the have-not so far early on in the WNBA season. One of the haves certainly would be the New York Liberty. And maybe one of the have-nots would be the Chicago Sky, sadly, there in the great city of Chicago. What do you make of tonight's matchup? I mean, look, if you don't want to lay the 18, you don't want to lay the 2100 to win 100 here on New York in the money line, how are some other ways that you might attack it? And I wonder, are they all fades of Chicago?
Yeah, this is going to be such an ugly game tonight, guys. I mean, a line of 18 is wild, but I still couldn't talk anyone off of laying those points, because the Liberty are just an absolute wagon, and the Sky, they might be one of the worst teams in the league. So I'm going to fade the Sky by taking their team total under. That's 73.5 right now. I like that because the Sky starting point guard, Courtney Vandersloot, just went out in this last game against the Fever, torn ACL. So she's done for the season. So all of a sudden you have a veteran point guard that was commanding the offense and setting up the offense in the half court. And now you're looking to Ariel Atkins, and she's a great player. Rachel Banham could do it. She's a good player. She's a veteran. Or you have Haley Van Lith, who's a rookie. So your options are limited just in terms of like getting that offense started and creating scoring opportunities for players like Angel Reese. This guy also turned the ball over a ton. They have the highest turnover rate in the league, give up a ton of points in transition. So there are so many ways that I want to play this game. I'm going to be conservative and just take the Sky team total. But I think this is just a absolute smash spot for New York. They're going to win by 20 plus. I think that is also a decent look just to lay the points, despite it being a crazy minus 18.
Kate, we always like to get look ahead spots. And for people that are not as initiated here for WNBA betting, first part of my question to you, is it imperative potentially in totals or spreads, maybe getting a line? And I'm thinking about tomorrow. I know you have a lean in this Lynx and Storm game. I looked at it too. The under 156.5 really jumped out to me, just kind of where the data is at this point. How important for you the look aheads and kind of the early betting to maybe catch a better part of the number as far as the NBA, WNBA goes?
Yeah, I think that's really important. I mean, if you were to play the look ahead lines or the early lines for the two games that I just mentioned, you would have gotten minus 2.5 in that Fever Dream game and minus 15. So in the Lynx and not the Lynx, the Liberty and Sky game. So it's extremely important. And that's why I'm looking ahead to this Lynx and Storm game tomorrow. I actually like the points with the Storm. I'm not sure they win outright, but this is a good spot where they're at home. They've already played the Lynx once this season. They outshot the Lynx in that game. And or, I'm sorry, the Lynx outshot the Storm in that game and only won by 5-6 points. So I think this is a decent spot for, again, a somewhat veteran team. You have Skylar Diggins-Smith, you have Nneka Egumike for Seattle to maybe hand the Lynx their first loss. Ooh. Or at least put them in trouble down the stretch. I think that could be something we're looking at for tomorrow.
Hey, you got to search a little bit sometimes to find the awards markets out there in the WNBA, right? But when you do, and you've already done this homework, maybe you can get ahead of the game here on a good number for Rookie of the Year. What are you looking at for that market in specifics?
Yeah, Paige Bueckers is the heavy favorite, yep. And for good reason. She's been phenomenal this season. But if you want some value, there isn't any value in betting into Paige Bueckers right now. So I like Kiki Irifin. She is the Mystics forward. And it's important to specify that she's the forward because her teammate, Sonia Citron, guard, she is the third favorite or has the third shortest odds and is someone who is being talked about in the running. But I like Irifin. She just won Rookie of the Month honors in May, averaging a double-double. Super efficient. She's shooting like 51% from the field, second on the team in scoring, leading the team in rebounds. She has just been doing it all for that Mystics team. And because the Mystics aren't super competitive this year, they're not a great team. She can kind of command a little bit more of that offense and really kind of grow as a rookie early on because she's being tasked with a lot of the responsibilities. So I think this number on Kiki Irifin is only going to get shorter. I would grab it now. I've seen as big as plus 650 out there.
I love it. And great stuff to follow early in the season. One final question for you on the WNBA and the futures market. Again, with the amount of teams that you believe in your mind have the opportunity to win the title. How do you weigh taking potential future prices to win it all right now versus maybe the upcoming schedule and maybe waiting to get a better part of a number? Or would you just recommend to people, hey, these are the teams that can do it. Outside of something unforeseen, no one else has a chance. What do you advocate for, taking a future number now or maybe waiting a little bit?
I think you take future numbers now for any team that isn't the Fever. Mm. I'm concerned about Caitlin Clark coming back. I know she's expected to come back potentially this next game, but that injury, I want to see what she looks like, because if she misses any more time, you're going to get a better number on a Fever future. And so I would recommend just waiting, seeing how she looks, and then diving into that futures market for the Fever specifically.
All right, Kate, before we get you out of here, let's stay in the great state of Indiana, but let's look to the Pacers and Thunder here for their all-important Game 3 going back to Indiana tomorrow night. 5.5 is the number here, total sitting at 228. But really, if you watch Tyrese Halliburton in Game 2, you're like, where was he for the first three quarters? Is there a play on Tyrese that you think is actionable in Game 3?
Yeah, I mean, talk about like a superstar in terms of making game-winning shot after game-winning shot, but yet just lays a dud. I mean, he had 5 points going into the fourth quarter of that Game 2. I am going to back him in the points market. I like Tyrese Halliburton over 17.5. The biggest reason for that, guys, is he hasn't shot a single free throw this entire series. Like, you have to imagine Rick Carlisle is hammering home that you have to get to the free throw line. And maybe he gets a couple more favorable calls at home. But if he's a little bit more aggressive and getting downhill, getting to the line, I mean, like I said, he played horrible in game two in terms of his production, his points production. 5 points going to the fourth quarter and still finished with 17 points. So being back at home, I think this is a good spot, maybe a little bit more comfortable shooting. I like Halliburton to go over that 17.5 points in that game three.
I know there's always like a lot of angst with guys like Brunson and SGA, but they're taking the ball to the rack and they're making the officials blow the whistle. I'm with you, Kate. You got to be more aggressive if you're Tyrese Halliburton tomorrow night there in game three. Kate, thanks for getting up early with us. We appreciate it. Great to catch up on the WNBA and beyond.
Of course. Thanks, guys. We'll see you soon.
There is. She is. Give her a follow on X at Kate Constable. Does a great job on the Better Angle. And by the way, of course, with the NBA Finals and the Stanley Cup playoffs going right now, ProfitX is offering the best odds all playoff long as they last. So ProfitX is a peer-to-peer sports exchange available in 40 or more states. First of its kind in the United States. You're going to be able to make your sports picks against the other group of fans, not the sports books. And that's going to get you the best odds up to 10 to 20% by average. You can even request your own odds if you'd like to do so. Download ProfitX today. Use the code VSIN. That's VSIN. Earn up to $200 in profit cash over your very first month. All right, Jensen, when we come back here, much more to get to, including a look ahead to the College World Series, maybe some surprise of some teams that are not there and teams that are. Plus, later on this hour, we're going to go out to Oakmont and catch up with Rex Hoggard to break down the United States Open. Come on back. It is VSIN by the books.
By the books, right here on VSiN.
We are back, VSiN by the books. Enjoyed the conversation with Kate Constable in the last segment, breaking down some WNBA selections for you out there. But without further ado, Jensen, we got to get to it. Hour number two, our highlights and headlines.
Help your bottom line with today's highlights and headlines.
Strike often, strike first. No mercy, sir. That was Florida last night. 6-1 winners over at the Edmonton Oilers. They take a 2-1 lead. They have vaulted now to rather big favorites here. Over $2 betting favorite, even though Edmonton still has home ice. And really the story of this one, Brad Marchand gets the scoring going early after ending game two north of the border. He begins game three with a goal. He's now the oldest guy to score goals in the first three Stanley Cup playoffs in the history of the Stanley Cup Finals. But how about this, Jensen? 21 penalties. That's how many penalties the Edmonton Oilers took last night. 85 penalty minutes. They pulled Stuart Skinner. I felt like at one point I was watching, God rest his soul, Paul Newman and Slapshot out there. I mean, let's just, if this thing devolved quickly into something we did not recognize from games one and two. And I guess the question now is, can they come off the deck for game four? Because if they don't, they're going to be in a massive hole, even though they still do own home ice advantage.
Okay, so do we go back to the well here? And I know I lean the under 6.5. For this upcoming game four. But do we go back to the well here and the Jonathan Davis special, and do you alt puck line the Oilers to win by two or more? Never want to go down 3-1 in a series, but is that, if you're an Edmonton backer, that to me feels like the play if you're looking to capitalize on, this is it, fellas, this is our season. We got to make sure that we get the equalizer to get home ice back. So anxious to see what this energy level is like in the first period. And with the way that Sergei Bobrovsky has been for Florida, does he continue to just be a wall, not only in the pipes, but this defense has done a great job of limiting opportunities for Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl to do damage, particularly in yesterday's game.
And again, the trends always say after game three, right? Stuart Skinner plays a little bit better. I felt like he was really, obviously, when you take that many, 21 penalties, and you're in the box and it's power play, you're going to give up goals. That's going to happen. I think the under, it would lend to an under in game four finally to get one. if they stay out of the sin bin. It's as simple as that. They play 5-on-5, they're going to have a much better chance of keeping muting that scoring and not allowing all those power play chances here. So really, that's going to be the key for me, Jensen. Can they play this more disciplined brand of hockey that we did not see last night? Because if they don't, writing could be on the wall there. How about this? And I want to get your thoughts on this. Murray State with a bit of a shocker last night. They downed Duke 5-4, so they get the last entry now into the College World Series in Omaha, which you're going to be attending. We're going to be attending as a network here starting. You're going to be flying out tomorrow starting on Thursday with our coverage. Jensen, tell us about Murray State now and getting that final ticket to Omaha.
First and foremost, if you have seen any the pictures of the home ballpark, and I hesitate to use the word ballpark because it really looks like a high school field, just being honest about it. So, these guys, this is the beauty of Cinderella in college sports. We talk about it a lot with March Madness, right? Bracket busters. For people looking for a seed equivalent here, it's like a 12 seed probably making the Final Four in men's basketball. But the fourth number four seed, Dave, in history here, since they went to the regional format the way they have it, to make the College World Series, only Fresno State in 2008 has won it as a four seed. So no shock here. Murray State still the longest of shots to win it at 40-1. But the conference breakdown, all right, this is probably the most unique part of the Omaha Eight. Two teams from the SEC, one from the ACC, one from the Big 12, one from the Sun Belt, one from the Missouri Valley,
wow,
one from the Big 10, and one independent. That is your field of eight, and what a unique field it certainly is.
Okay, so you're going to be there. We're going to be there, by the way. We're hitting the road as a network, right? So we're going to be there for the College World Series in Omaha. You're going to be at Rocco's starting Thursday. That's the legendary home of the Jell-O Shot Challenge. So, Jensen, you're going to be doing your great work, as you always do there, knowing these teams intimately, some of them that you've actually watched, like Arizona, up close and personal. Money Moves, Follow the Money at their typical times. Bonus edition of Follow the Money on Saturday. So head over to VSiN.com/CWS for College World Series for all the details and free College World Series betting guide. It's all there for you. We're doing it big here as a network. You've been doing it big. Let's break down these games a little bit in totality. I mentioned that you saw Arizona up close and personal on Friday. They get Coastal Carolina as the 13 seed. And then the other Friday matchup will be Louisville against Oregon State. Tell us what you might expect to see early on a Friday.
Well, we get a championship rematch of the 2016 College World Series final between Arizona and Coastal Carolina. And that was when Coastal won the national championship. Now, I got to tell you, they got some horses, man. They got some hurlers, and they are riding the highs. What, 23, 24 consecutive win streak that they will put to the test. Arizona, I've been telling people, have the it factor, man. They get blown out 18-2. In game one of the Chapel Hill Regional, and then come back with some late inning offense, capitalizing on some errors from North Carolina, but they get the equalizer in game two on Saturday, and ultimately the super regional winner on Sunday afternoon. Louisville is a very dynamic team. There's a lot of different ways they can beat you. Middle of their lineup is very solid. And they're pitching. They've got a couple of first-day draft prospects as well. Oregon State, just a team with so much and a program with so much pedigree. If you remember, 2007, 2008, if I remember correctly, is when they had the back-to-back national champions. That's when you had the likes of Adley Rutschman and Stephen Kwan, also a member of the Cleveland Guardians, an alum there of Oregon State. So pedigree is there. Saturday, there you go. Cinderella going to take on the UCLA, the representative of the now Big Ten. And again, you probably see a lot of offense in that first game of the second day. And then the behemoths, LSU and Arkansas, the Blue Bloods of the SEC. These were the two odds-on favorites entering the field of 64, Dave. It's no surprise here that they find their way through. And Arkansas just absolutely dismantling the defending champion Tennessee Volunteers in their Fayetteville Super Regional. I had leaned Arkansas at the beginning of this tournament as the team that I would look at to win it. Really nothing has changed for me on that end. The irony of that part of the bracket, Dave, one of those teams is going to try and come through the loser's bracket. So from a futures perspective, if you're looking at it, you probably want to go towards the other side if you're looking for maybe a better odd payout. I would say Arizona is my lean at the moment. I think you can find them upwards of 14-1 still in some places to be able to win it. If you're looking for the ultimate dark horse, it's probably Louisville or UCLA, but I just think that LSU or Arkansas, one of those two going to be way too much for that right side of the bracket.
For that first game that's going to be early on Friday, we see now Coastal is a pretty big favorite here, minus 230 against Arizona, plus $1.75. That second game on Friday, you've got the Ville as a dog, plus $1.24 against Oregon State at minus $1.60. Does that number by Coastal surprise you, or is this like, no, this is a wagon? They are the ranked team here, and even though Arizona maybe has got some magic dust on them, Coastal should be over a $2 betting favorite.
That seems about right. That might be a bit heavy for me, just having watched Arizona and knowing what their late-inning offense and bullpen resources are like. They have arguably the best closer in the nation in Tony Pluta, who hasn't given up earned runs, I think, since the beginning of April. So you look at that matchup in and of itself. As I said, Coastal starting rotation, very, very solid offensively. A lot of different weapons for them. Arizona's middle, you talk about a great feel-good story. Mason White, who plays shortstop for them, he was born and raised in Tucson. Way back in 2012, the last time that Arizona won the national title, he told us in his post-game interview, he bought the shirt immediately after they won, watched every single minute of it, and dreamed one day of being able to put on the uniform and be able to win a national title for Arizona. Dave, he got the game-winning hit in the winner-take-all game on Sunday. The go-ahead 2-RBI single was overcome with emotion. You could tell it meant so much to him to not only be part of this team, but to be the guy that put them into Omaha. And I got to tell you, so many great narratives that will come out of these first couple of days and throughout these couple of weeks in Omaha. So what a way to get this tournament started on Friday afternoon, and can't wait to be there to see it.
I don't know how you don't get emotional about sports, especially when you hear stories like that, by the way. Very quickly, you mentioned the behemoth between LSU and Arkansas. That will be the high-profile game. That's the big one on Saturday night. Numbers right there with you, Jensen. Arkansas minus $1.20, come back, and LSU's minus $1.10. So, you know, just 10 cents more towards the Hogs. This is going to – you don't want to say de facto, because as you mentioned, the other team's going to have the opportunity to come through that loser's bracket, but this does feel like you're looking at the clear favorite, whoever survives this, right?
Yeah, and just for that Saturday night game, by the way, if you've ever seen is electric a sports atmosphere, wait till you see both fan bases show up.
Oh,
it is
wow.
Going to be wild to see that scene on Saturday night.
You're going to get 40,000 people every day at Oakmont. That's going to be starting up on Thursday. That's going to be a wild atmosphere as well. Rex Hoggard is already on the grounds. He's joining us next here as we break down the United States Open right here on VSiN by the Books.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
We are back, VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross, Jensen Lewis here on a Tuesday. Boy, I can't believe in short order, 48 hours from now, they'll be teeing up to play round number one at Oakmont, the beginning of the United States Open. If you're a golf geek like I am, I hope you've been watching the coverage over there on Golf Channel. It's fantastic. Rex Hoggard does a great job over there with Todd Lewis and the guys. Joins us now here in the Progressive Guest Line. Give him a follow at Rex Hoggard GC. Rex, really enjoyed it so far. I wonder for you guys being there, I feel like obviously when we got to Augusta, the storyline was Rory and getting that career grand slam, right? Then you get to the PGA and it's going to be, is Rory going to be able to move forward and maybe win all four? And then Scotty takes back center stage. I feel like this week, at least right now, we're talking about the golf course more than we are the actual players of the golf course. Is that fair? And is that just because it is Oakmont?
I think it's because it's Oakmont. And look, this happens a lot at the U.S. Open. I think we probably were having similar conversations last year around Pinehurst. There's a reason why this is one of the anchor venues for the U.S. Open. There's a reason why this has hosted the U.S. Open for the 10th time. I mean, it's such a special venue. And we were just talking in the break. We're probably going to spend the next 2 days talking about the golf course. There's other storylines, certainly still to talk about Rory and Scotty and Xander and everyone else that goes into it. But it's such a unique golf course. And I'm friends with a member. And I've actually never played it. And I remember a few years ago, I was up here for some work, and he asked me, do you want to come out and play it? And I gave it a long, like, pregnant pause. And I'm like, No, I'm good. It's almost like I don't want to ruin the mystique of, I know how hard it is, and I have no interest in getting punched in the face.
Rex, and with those storylines with the course, for people that are going to be tuning in for the first time, or maybe they hear all the hype about how difficult it is, in your personal experience, what should we be watching out for? Maybe particular parts of the course, particular hole stretches. What is the difficulties that are going to be top of mind for you as we get into Thursday and Friday?
The rough is brutal. I mean, just as thick and nasty and gnarly as I think I've ever seen. It's going to be the toughest driving test that we've seen, certainly this year on the PGA Tour, maybe in a couple years, because Pinehurst was difficult last year. I mean, we all remember what happened with Bryson DeChambeau and Rory McIlroy coming down the stretch. But it wasn't like this, where there is such a premium on hitting fairways. And that's going to be what I would watch. For example, we talked about this last night on Live From. You would look at Bryson DeChambeau as easily one of the favorites going into this, based on just what he's been able to do this year in the major championships. Forget about what he's done on LIV Golf. However, the one thing that you would probably going to have to watch is, how is he going to drive the ball? Because even last year at Pinehurst, when he won, he didn't drive the ball particularly well, but he could get away with it. This week at Oakmont, he will not be able to get away with it. And that's what you would watch. I mean, certainly Rory is struggling with his driver. You look at other players who could go out and make some noise. It's all going to depend on their ability to hit fairway.
Rex, that's so interesting, because we're talking kind of like brute force. That, like, we don't talk about physical golfers very often, but if you go back, like, Jack at the time was the physical guy. Tiger, you know, we saw Tiger when he beefed up, and you can get out of this gnarly rough from time to time. Is that really something that you've got to be physically strong to get the ball out of the rough? Because, yeah, Bryson can't overpower this golf course like he might have been able to do at Wingfoot and or at Pinehurst, but is that really something we have to look at to analyze which golfers can actually figure out a way to conquer Oakmont the best way you can conquer Oakmont, if that's possible?
Going to be a physical toll about it. My guess is there's going to be some guys that leave Oakmont after this week with some achy wrist, because hitting out of that rough is going to be brutal. I think Bryson is interesting, because then you brought up Wingfoot. 2020 is such a unique example in the game. And I remember covering that U.S. Open and asking players questions about, is Bryson DeChambeau redefining the game? And I think it was Xander Schauffele who answered the question was, no, he's just taking advantage of the game right now. And I don't think he can do what he did in 2020 at Wingfoot. Keep in mind, that was played in September, the COVID year. It wasn't quite what we've come to expect out of the Wingfoot U.S. Open. It wasn't that venue. It was still tough. I'm not taking anything away from him. But he was able to hit driver pretty recklessly, to be honest with you, and still wedge it onto greens and still give himself an opportunity. The one I keep coming back to is when Dustin Johnson won here at Wingfoot back in 2016. His scrambling was 73%, which is phenomenal. As much as we like to think of Dustin Johnson as a power player and someone who can overpower golf courses, that's not what he did to win this one. He got up and down. His short game is what won him that U.S. Open.
Rex, now with those things in mind, I wrote down a couple of names and intrigued your thoughts. So Xander was an easy one just because of where he is from an odds perspective. But we've talked a lot of the European golfers. So Tyrrell Hatton, Shane Lowry were up there. Even Johnny Rahm towards the top of the leaderboard as far as odds go. Of those guys, who stands out to you as far as their recent form and their course fit here for Oakmont?
I was just texting a friend of mine here at and the obvious ones are Scotty, and I think Xander's probably going to have a solid lead. But I wrote Shane Lowry in for a lot of different reasons. One, I had totally blanked that back in 2016, I think he finished tied for fourth, and he was really in the mix up until the very end. That wasn't a backdoor top four. And he's playing well enough. When his game is on, we've seen it. He's won major championships. He is plenty good enough to compete against the world's best, and there was something about this golf course in 2016 that he liked, and I would imagine it's going to be the same this week.
When I look at what happened just last week here, a couple of days ago at the Canadian RBC Open there, and you see Ryan Fox getting that win, and Cameron Young finished third there, right? So we're looking at the playoff with Sam Burns. Out of those guys, I'm seeing Sam's 80-1 here. Cameron Young's been shorted a little bit, about 115-1 here. And Ryan Fox, do any of their games translate this week, or is that completely different north of the border from what we're going to see in Pennsylvania?
It is different. Again, I don't think anything can compare to Oakmont, to be fair. I like Ryan Fox, though. I did go back to watching last Sunday, and I was taken a little bit by the idea, and I think Trevor Immelman, my colleague at CBS, does a brilliant job. But I kept thinking to myself, is he still regretting not putting Ryan Fox on that President's Cup team that lost so badly at Quail Hollow because he is such a powerful player. And just the way he plays the game, almost with a little bit of abandon, it's fun to watch Ryan Fox play the game. I will say, going from his first PGA Tour victory, which was just the week before the PGA Championship at Myrtle Beach, and I had high expectations for him going into the PGA Championship, and that did not work out well. And this is going to be a similar test. So he has a skill set. He just hasn't done it in a major, and I'm kind of one of those waiting. I have to see it first kind of guys.
Rex, one of the themes we've talked about this week is big names that potentially we won't see over the weekend. So that miss the cut market is something we've kind of looked at. And, you know, I think you would probably have the best viewpoint there, not only of seeing guys coming into the week, but how this course and where it will put guys mentally may have some of those big names missing. In your mind, who are the guys that are probably the biggest names that are at the highest risk, if you will, of not making it to Saturday and Sunday?
I'm pretty sure, 4 weeks ago, maybe 5 weeks ago, we were having a conversation about going into the rest of the majors of this season. It would be Scotty and Rory, Rory and Scotty, whatever two combinations you wanted to put them. And now I'm going to answer this question and say it's going to be Rory McIlroy, simply because of what we've seen out of him his last two starts, which is being a little bit of a prisoner of the moment. I understand the words that are coming out of my mouth, but I said this last night on Live From. The stat that blows me away when it comes to Rory in his last two starts, he's given away almost five shots to the field off the tee, strokes gained off the tee. That is the antithesis of what Rory McIlroy is. When he's playing well, when he is a dominant player, as we've seen him be this season, less than a month ago, pretty much, at the Masters, it's because of his driver. There's no other part of his game that just blows you away. Everything else is solid, but it's the driver that really separates him from the rest of the pack. And when he's giving away strokes, that's a dangerous combination. We saw him shoot the worst round of his career on the PGA Tour in a non-major last week in Canada. We could see him one up that this week at Oakmont.
You know, Rex, when I look at the first page of the leaderboard, the top 10 in the odds market here, and obviously Scotty should be plus 275. I understand that because it feels like for anybody that can play a hard golf course, it's going to be Scotty. But there's only three names out of the top 10 on the odds board that have not won a major. And that would be Joaquin Niemann, that would be Tommy Fleetwood, and the big Swede, Ludvig Åberg. Out of those three, who do you think would have the best chance to break through this week? Would it be Fleets? Would it be a Niemann? Or can we actually trust that Ludvig Åberg is going to be able to live up to all the promise and talent that the young man has?
Best player who hasn't is one of the best conversations ever in sports radio history, isn't it? Like, we were having this conversation just a few days ago, because I would make an argument right now Tommy Fleetwood is the best player not to have won on the PGA Tour. But there's plenty of other players. Certainly Cam Young, who you just mentioned, would be on that list as well. That being said, I would say Ludvig Åberg is best prepared to win a major championship just because of the tools that he has in the box right now. What he's able to do on a golf course when his game is on is very impressive. And I think Joaquin would have to be right behind him. The only reason I would lean against Joaquin is the same reason that we just described. I kind of have to see it. What Joaquin has done on LIV Golf is beyond impressive. And I have no interest in dismissing that. He has become a better player since he went to LIV Golf. And I don't think you can say that pretty much about anyone else who went to LIV Golf. That just hasn't translated in the major yet. So of those three, I'm picking Ludvig.
All right, 20 seconds ago, Rex. Does the winner have a red number by their name on Sunday? Or is this an over par winner this week?
I have a stats friend of mine that sent me sort of the course breakdown. And he said 400 is probably the magic number. I'm guessing somewhere around then, depending on conditions, but it's going to be long and hard.
Can't wait. Rex, great stuff over at the Golf Channel. Appreciate your time as always.
Hey, guys. Thanks.
There he is right there at Oakmont. Rex Hocker, give him a follow. Check him out. The coverage over there at Golf Channel has been fantastic so far. It'll be so all week long. When we come back, all win totals in the NFL. Love this market. That's next year. Be some other books.
The books right here on VSiN.
Fascinating conversation about Oakmont. We'll talk much more about the U.S. Open here on this show and certainly tomorrow as we get ready. Wednesdays with Wes Reynolds will join us tomorrow as well. Tyler Fulgham's going to join the program from ESPN, so we got a lot of people going to help break down the U.S. Open. But we do have some big news. If you're maybe a Cincinnati Bengals backer out there like I am upcoming, I was waiting, Jensen, as you know, for the last couple of months. Trey Hendrickson, get this deal done with the Bengals. Nope, not happening. That's news that it looks like Hendrickson has not received a new contract offer, so therefore he's not going to be attending those Bengals mandatory mini camps. So just note that if you're looking to those Bengals futures, I don't know how that defense is not better with that big 91 out there. So we'll figure out what happens with Trey. A lot of time now before you get there. Sometimes veterans just don't want to go to camp. I understand that part of it too. But if you're a Bengals backer and you want to take them seriously in the AFC, you better hope you get that figured out with Hendrickson. How about these alt win totals here? And we'll look to the AFC West today, because the team that everybody has to beat now, I know maybe on paper you look at them and go, well, come on, they're not that good. They've been to the last three Super Bowls to represent the AFC. That'd be the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, look at their adjusted win total. If you think they can win 13 or more football games this year, Jensen, plus money, plus 260. Is this a 12-win football team? Plus money, plus $1.35. Is this just an 11-win football team? Well, you got to lay $1.60 right there. Does that tell you that I believe the bettors believe some of that might have been fairy dust last year? You win all those close games. You get teams that are missing field goals late that could be losses, but you get wins. I mean, a lot of things had to go right for the Chiefs to get there, but they got there, Jensen. So how do you view Kansas City this year as the leader of the AFC West?
Yeah, so we go back to last year. What was it? 11.5, I think, was their win total. So they exceed that by 3.5, going 15-2. Seven primetime games this year. Ooh. On the schedule, including now the new national holiday. It's not Christmas. It's Chiefsmas. And so they'll have a divisional battle there, too. And then you have the Ravens and the Bengals early in the year, plus the division. Okay, that's a lot. So my initial thought was the over 11.5, plus 135. I do believe that if the offensive weapons are healthy, that is a gettable number, just knowing how Andy Reid is from a schematic standpoint. Of course, Steve Spagnuolo, you and I have sung his praises. We think potentially the best defensive coordinator, if not the best overall coordinator outside of head coaches. So that price, plus 11.5, I know their win total right now, 11.5 is even money to the over in some places. But to me, that one feels pretty solid. I don't know if you can get to 12.5 for me, just knowing there is potential regression. But overall, I think it's doable, man. So that would be my recommendation. Would be the over 11.5 at that plus price.
So again, we talk about the anomalies out there, like in the NFC East, you've not had a repeat champion in the division in over 20 years. Every year that Patrick Mahomes has been the starting quarterback and Andy Reid's been the head coach, they've won the AFC West. Now, who's going to be the second charger to them, pun intended? Will it be LA or will it be Denver? With all due respect to the Raiders, I feel like that's where the conversation begins for number two. Who's really going to be, if anybody, to push them? If you look at the numbers here in the adjusted win totals, that would suggest it's the Chargers. So 9.5, you got to lay small juice at $1.15. You want to play them to win 9 games, you got to lay a lot of juice at $2.35. To win 11 games, okay, you're going to get plus money at plus $1.85. If you believe this is an 11-win football team, based on the conversation we just had about the Chiefs, would you take a stab at the Chargers then to win the division if you believe this is an 11-win team at minimum?
Very much a value play, right? Especially at that price. And again, getting Omarion Hampton, Trey Harris in the fold now. You know, obviously Najee Harris coming over, who will probably be the bell cow at least to get things moving out of the gates. I told you I did like the Chargers, even against the Chiefs in that Week 1 matchup on the neutral site.
Yep.
That late stretch, though, oh my, the back end of that schedule, you could have 5 straight weeks playing 5 potential playoff hopefuls. We believe that the Eagles, Chiefs, and hopefully your Cowboys are in that discussion, but definitely the Texans, we think, are going to be there in the AFC South. The Broncos, upstarts within their own division. I think over 9.5 is fair. Shop around for the best price. Certainly a value play and an upside play if you want the over 10.5 at almost 2-1.
This was a team I identified last year. I had a really good futures year last year in identifying the Vikings in the NFC side, and this was my AFC side. And they get there with the adjusted win totals a year ago with those 11 wins last year. So now you got to go up a rung, if you will, from a year ago. Those prices have gone up. Yesterday's price is not today's price, as we know from the wire. So here we are now with the Chargers. How about the Broncos? You want to talk about a seismic move up, okay? And that's because, and we talked about it on the network a lot last year, I like to value quarterbacks and or head coaches. I didn't know about the quarterback in Bo Nix, but I knew about the head coach in Sean Payton. And Sean Payton wasn't going to put his reputation on the line if he's not drafting this kid 12th overall, if he didn't think he was going to play him and be successful with him. Now, a year removed from that, Jensen, if you think this is a 9-win football team at minimum, you got to weigh $1.80. If you think this is a 10-win football team, remember, playoff team a year ago, plus $1.10. And then if you think they're 11 or more, plus $2.30. Are they going to take another step up? Because to bet those overs, you are betting on another massive step up from a year ago.
So, again, let's start with the quarterback, right? And Bo Nix, boy, did he show exponential growth, especially, 5-2 in those final seven games. Their win total last year, 5.5. They blow the doors off that one, exceeding that, getting to 10-7. All right, so here's the rub. And also the caveat. Top 10 defense last year, right? So you hopefully that comes back and improves, and that's going to keep you in a lot of games. Look at that road schedule to start the year. Look at the amount of games they play away from Mile High and then the opponents that they'll have to take it up against. So that, to me, is part of the handicap here for that win total. Now, over 9.5, I think there's places you can get it at plus money. I think you take that and you run with it. Yep. I do feel that you can get right back there and feeling as though the middle to end of that schedule, you're probably going to have a pretty good idea of what you need as far as not only within a division, but to lock up a playoff spot. So we say this about the NFC North, thinking that could be the most competitive division. The NFC West is going to have something to say about that. The AFC West, and knowing what Pete Carroll is going to have with the Raiders too, I know we'll get to them in a moment, but I would say that the over 9.5, you can get it at plus money. Might as well take it. Absolute great value for that price.
Well, speaking of those Raiders out here in Las Vegas, find somebody that loves Geno Smith as much as Pete Carroll does, and you're going to be a really happy person in your life, right? So you bring Geno back, see a reunion there from the Seattle days. It's going to happen out here in the desert. And you know, look at this number now, 6.5. This was, by the way, a fade team for me last year and cashed all those tickets. I cashed the adjusted win total under as well. Now it's sitting at 6.5. You think this is a 7-win football team, you got to lay $1.55. 8-win football team plus $1.30. To have a winning record, you're going to get plus $2.70. I trust Pete Carroll a lot in the betting market here, but this is a quick ask in year one to take over this team and to hit some of those overs. How do you view what old man Pete, I affectionately say that, by the way, for Pete Carroll, I think he's forgotten more football than most people will ever know.
So the early part of the schedule, let's focus on that. And if you go off the statistics from last year, five of those six teams had pretty lackluster rush defenses. And so if that is going to be the MO here for Pete, knowing you got Ashton Gentry in the backfield there with Geno, that is where you're going to have to make your hay, right? You're going to have to get potentially those home wins against the Bears and the Titans. You may have to steal one in Foxborough in week one and maybe even go to Indianapolis if they're still having quarterback issues there too. So the over 7.5 is already my initial lean there if you can get that home. You would figure, Dave, talk about brutal late stretches.
Oh,
are
boy.
You kidding me with the back end of that
That's
schedule?
What I'm looking at right now,
oh,
too.
Oh, man.
I mean, you hope that week 17 at home against the Giants, you can book that for a win, but pass that at L.A. for the Chargers, the Broncos, you have the Chiefs at the end of the year. I mean, that division is brutal. But again, I'm with you. If I took a lean anywhere, I would play a trust in Pete play here and play that adjusted win total over at plus money there. I do think with a last place schedule, they should have some wins early. They will get tougher late, so you better get those early. Check out the VSiN betting splits here. When you become a VSiN Pro subscriber, you have access to those for as little as $9.99 for your very first month. All you have to do is go over to VSiN.com/subscribe. You're not only going to get the betting splits here from Circa, but also from DraftKings, so you can monitor those changing numbers as we do each and every day. It's going to make you a better. So check out the betting splits $9.99 at VSiN.com/subscribe.